This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information, brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association, found on the web at www.nysta.org. My name's Frank Rossi. I'm the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and the following are observations for the week of October 22nd, 2012. Ideal fall weather conditions has allowed for significant recovery of even the most devastated turf areas. The only areas that continue to lag are putting surfaces that experience severe damage over the summer months and the heavily trafficked sports turf. In both cases, time, fertilizer, rest, and seed will help heal the wounds. Hopefully, you noticed you did not receive an issue of Shortcut the last few weeks. Reduction in funding over the years has resulted in reduction in services, and while we have remained persistent that Shortcut is a valuable resource, a choice had to be made. Each year we budget to produce 32 weeks of real-time information available to you in an easy-to-read, and for those of you who love the podcast, about 350 from around the world format. You will continue to hear from us over the next few months, but on a more irregular basis. For example, this is your first installment in 2 weeks. Please trust we are working diligently to procure the funding to provide the information for the weeks you are growing grass, and our commitment to this resource is as strong as ever. Talk to your association leadership and ask to see the funding level increase to ensure you will receive Shortcut when you need it most. Our Cornell Cooperative Extension update begins at Walt Nelson's Western New York Report. Sports fields are benefiting from reasonable growing weather and appear to be holding their own. New seedings are growing, albeit slower than earlier in the season. Reports of mammal damage as they forage for white grubs. The Adirondack report from Emily Selleck and Lynn Wilson. Many courses have areas that probably won't recover from dry weather, but they are greatly improved. Some are back on a summer mowing schedule for a little while. Soil temps are still high enough to make everything grow. Color is bright and green and looking healthy. A nice contrast to the bright reds and oranges in the hills. Next week, many will apply their first snow mold pre-treatment on greens and tees and also start core cultivation of fairways next week. The Capital Report from Dave Chinnery. Things in turf have been mostly quiet, although I have been seeing some digging damaged by wildlife looking for grubs and also had several calls from people just discovering the extent of their grub problem and wanted to take action. People are still wanting to seed new areas, although it is clearly very late as well. The Eastern Long Island report from Tom Kowalsik. Rainfall and cooler temperatures have created some nice growing conditions for turf. You can really see the difference in how turf is greened up compared to previous weeks. The Diagnostic Lab in Suffolk County Cooperative Extension gets calls on turf damage from animals searching for grubs. And finally, the Westchester report from Jared Giordano. As scattered frost reached southern sections, most are finished seeding as colder soil and air temperatures significantly slow germination. Landscapers have reported good seeding success this fall as previous renovations fill in amid recent rains. Sparse lawns not repaired are supporting crops of chickweed, wild strawberry, and dandelions. Rust and powdery mildew have been observed with severe leaf spot on one sample. The USGA update serves as our regional update for this week from senior agronomist Jim Skorolski of the United States Golf Association Northeast Region. Most of New England experienced its first killing frost freeze of the week last weekend. For most, this marks the true beginning of the end of the 2012 growing season. The season's drought and record heat created many challenges and pushed maintenance crews hard from the beginning of the spring. The lack of natural precipitation in summer was, in hindsight, a good thing for golf courses, considering the high temperatures. Humidity seemed unusually high through early August and early September, ramping up disease pressure, namely dollar spot and gray leaf spot at golf courses. The majority of golf courses fared well despite the weather challenges, and primary playing areas are in good condition as winter approaches. The one exception has been rough areas, where the cumulative effects of drought, insect damage, disease, and increased weed pressure still remain noticeable and have caught the attention of golfers. The demise of rough areas is not new, let's face it. There are only so many resources available, and those are used first on primary play areas as they should be. However, the appearance and playability of the rough areas is on the radar, especially following a summer like this when traditional low-maintenance programs were not effective. I anticipate that turf managers will continue to feel more pressure to improve the appearance and uniformity of rough areas going forward, so be prepared with ideas on how to accomplish that or defend the practices currently in place. Annual bluegrass weevils remain active in the region. I observed feeding damage on greens and collars on a Connecticut golf course earlier this week. The good news is the larvae have little chance of surviving the winter, but the superintendent is not going to take any chances. And finally, from Jim Skorolski, a note about earthworms. The cooler temperatures, rain events, and extended periods of dew have brought earthworms back to the surface in a big way. Their castings are making a mess. Those that have implemented top dressing programs are experiencing less surface activity. Applications of the early bird product when timed with a soaking rain continues to work fairly well. Mowing height should be increased by this point if they have not yet been, to improve the plant's ability to accumulate carbohydrates that will be required to survive the winter ahead. Finally, monitor the fall shade patterns closely and use that information to plan the next round of tree removal work. Rich Buckley brings us a diagnostic update from Rutgers University. Regular rains and moderate temperatures have the grass looking pretty good right now. We've seen a couple of obligatory samples of Dollar Spot, Take All, and a bit of rust in ryegrass and bluegrass in the last few weeks, but that was all. It was a pretty good year for gray leaf spot. We had samples almost daily in late September, but even those samples have waned as we passed into October. And then an update about the landscape diagnostic report starts with a note about conifers with seasonal needle drop. It's normal for conifers to drop needles. Subacute periods of stress just helps to knock them off at a faster pace. One that we notice, all of us have seen white pines with interior needle yellowing. Arborvitae is also one of the most conspicuous offenders, but we've also had plenty of spruce in the lab with a similar condition. Boxwood samples are coming in droves. Earlier in the year it was boxwood leaf miner, but now we are seeing Volutella leaf and stem blight in almost every sample. Volutella exploits plant material that has been stressed in some manner. Transplant deep planting, mulch, regular irrigations and wet feet, nutrient deficiency, sun scald, winter injury are all common predisposing conditions. I'm grateful that everyone plants it, keeps the lab going, but it seems that boxwood is a pretty fickle plant and one I might avoid. And finally, a note about oak with bacterial leaf scorch. Bacterial leaf scorch sample numbers increased this season for the first time in a couple years. Awareness of this disease is pretty high, so most of the samples are positive tests. Red and pin oak are always the most common submissions, but we also see an occasional white oak and more than a few willow oak samples with the disease. I'm wondering if we're seeing a surge in disease activity or if folks finally have a few extra bucks to pay for the testing. And finally, my note, engaging in the grass. Extending the growing season. Now that much of the region has experienced a killing frost, the end of the growing season officially here. The issue is many of our turf areas, especially high traffic golf and sports turf, will continue to be used at a time when temperature and day length prevent active growth. Of course, the roots are still growing, but that does not help much when the surface is laid bare. One option is to find ways to extend the active growth of the plant. Again, light and temperature are the issue, so unless you're going to install a portable grow light system like the one used at Lambeau Field by the Green Bay Packers for about $10,000 per setup, then increasing temperature is your best option. There are two viable approaches, both with a few options. First, you can use seed bed or evergreen covers on bright sunny days that you keep on during the evening hours will allow the surface temperature to increase as much as 10 to 15 degrees Fahrenheit and maintain active growth. Be careful not to overstimulate growth right before temperatures go below 25. A more reasonable option that allows for continued use is some form of darkening agent. I've seen crumb rubber, compost, black sand, diluted black athletic field paint, and green pigments such as Civitas with Harmonizer, Turf Screen, or others. In most cases, you will gain between 5 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit from these types of agents. And in most cases, that is all you'll need to keep the turf growing through the heavy traffic. And finally, a note about tree leaves. As the leaves are falling from the trees, it is always wise to remember the best approach for dealing with them is to mulch them into the turf. Several studies have found no negative effect. In fact, several positive effects of increasing spring color, less dandelions, and no change in soil nutrient status. One Michigan study investigated the best mowing height that left the plot the cleanest the following spring. In that study, they mulched 150, 300, and 450 pounds of leaves per 1,000 square feet. The study showed clearly that no mowing height could handle the 450 pounds, two times more than the mature trees would drop in a year, but the 300 pounds were mulched easily with no debris visible the following spring when mowed at 3 inches. In the end, there's growing pressure to make this work, and mowing height of mulch leaves into the canopy seems like the best option. Thank you for joining me for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi here at Cornell University, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.